Hey, everybody. We've got another episode of The Old Skids coming to you really quick. But before we do that, we just want to kind of pause and take stock of where we're at right now. This is our 100th episode. It's kind of crazy that we've been doing this since, what was this, Trevor? Like June? Actually, I'm looking at it right now.
When was our first original message, though?
The trailer came out, looking at it, in June of 2020. So this is 2 years and change. We've gone through format changes. We've gone through cadence changes. And we've gone through life changes. We've gone through work changes. And we're still here. And I don't know. I just kind of want to stop and reflect at this little hobby. It's still going. People are still listening. People are messaging us still. It's really cool. Just kind of want to take a second and acknowledge that. Trevor, how are you feeling?
I feel like every time I tell people about the podcast, I'm like, yeah, you know, it started out as a quarantine hobby just so we could keep talking every week about movies and hone our skills, creative skills, work on my editing and everything. And then it's just, we kept doing it and we are still doing it. It's like the one consistent thing that's been throughout the last like 2.5 years is that, because we've moved, we've had position and job changes, you know, there's been some other sorts of changes, and this has been just the thing that's consistent, and I hope it will remain consistent for at least another 100 episodes, because we got quite a few more movies we want to do, quite a few more people we'd like to get on the show, and quite a few more milestones we'd like to hit.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, you said it. So before we get into this week's episode on The Little Vampire, we got a great guest, Anya Garrity from The Girls of Crabby Horror is coming on. Really excited to have her back and talk about this movie. Let's talk about what we've done so far really quick. And if you're not interested in this, you can just skip ahead to the episode itself. Some of the favorites we've got here. Trevor, do you have any favorite episodes you want to talk about that you liked, why you liked it, that you want to highlight?
I think one of my favorites is The Three Ninjas. Mm-hmm. It's just because you were hyping it up so much and you're going to be so disappointed if I didn't like it. And I think the memory of me recommending The Three Ninjas, because you were on video, no one else could see, but you were just so happy and so thrilled. And I feel like we just had a great discussion and had a great time with it. And it's just a perfect example of why we did this podcast, because it's a movie of, if you saw it when you were a kid, you knew. But if you didn't see it, you'd be curious to listen to people that are passionate about this kind of movie. Mm-hmm. And then another one I think I had and wrote down is Problem Child, because it's just such a deep cut and something that I was like, this is the worst movie I've ever seen, but I kind of love it. Mm-hmm. And you, I don't even remember if you like recommended it, but our discussion was really great. There was just a lot of fun back and forth, and a movie that we pretty much disagreed with on, but still came together on a lot of great discussion points and had a great time both watching it and talking about it. It is not a great movie by any means, but it was fun watching because it's so bad.
Yeah, I love both those episodes. I'm glad to hear you bring them up. I think I love the Polar Express episode. I really like how just unabashedly hateful that we were towards that movie.
You were pretty hateful towards it.
And that one, I mean, just behind the scenes, that's one of our most downloaded episodes. It's our second most downloaded episode. So I love seeing how much that resonated with you guys. I've got a very soft spot for the Old Kids Christmas special. I, you know, love reminiscing about Christmas and that time of year and the holidays when I was a kid. So just hearing us talk about and having that conversation with you about what we value in content from our childhood, from mm-hmm. that time period and specifically that time of year. I love that episode. And I also love the Little Manhattan episode. I love debating with you about whether Josh Hutcherson should have gotten an Oscar, which I still stand by. And I also think I really enjoyed the Air Bud episode. I liked doing that one. And the last one I'll say is I liked the Small Soldiers episode, and you gave me something to think about. And when I went back and watched it this year, I was kind of a little bit more on your side. I still love the movie, but sure. you were saying how your friend paused the movie in the middle of it and said, this movie is frustratingly close. And I just remember how critical you were, and not, you know, negative on it, but just like you were taking a critical eye to the movie and thinking about what could have
made it work
better.
I remember that line, because I'm like, yes. It was like, I want to like it. It's making me want to like it, but I just can't because of this. That's a great episode. These are all episodes that you should listen to if you have not yet. These are like our recommendations for and a lot of the ones with guests, like the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Attack of the Clones, the Scooby-Doo 2 with Girls Who Cried Be Horror. There's some great ones. Anytime John Allegretti's on our show for Inspector Gadget 2 and Monster House, If you want to get into the Halloween season, I think all of our holiday episodes are fun. But as far as like the best movie we've done, what do you think is?
I mean, yeah, objectively, it's The Incredibles. I think that The Incredibles is the best film, the best made film that we've done. But let me look through the rest of the list here.
I was just going to say Spider-Man, but that's a little bit of a cop-out because it's PG-13, even though it was during our superhero month. I'm going to say probably the one that kind of like, and then I'll ask you what was the worst one. Maybe I'll give the one that actually impressed me the most with, the one that I'm like, oh, this was a great time. I think Clockstoppers. Clockstoppers, that one, and I just had it. I have like our feed up. It's Clockstoppers and Max Keeble's Big Move. Because I was like, oh, these are probably not going to age super well. But I'm like, you know what? I'm actually having a lot of fun with this. And there's a lot of great stuff in here. Aside from like the ones we know we're going to like, or the ones that either we haven't seen or haven't seen in a long time, are great. Also, the 13th year is a great episode with the Queer Quadrant. Forgot to mention that. And also, all of our episodes on those feeds, on the other feeds, are also great. Aside from The Incredibles, what do you think is the best? Or the one that you were the most surprised with?
Yeah, I've got a few. Actually, let me try to narrow it down because I don't want to waste everybody's time. I would probably say I think Big Fat Liar surprised me the most at how much I thought, wow, yeah, this one too. Really does still hold up. And I was very, very pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed Rugrats in Paris.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
But yeah, I think we got to look at, you know, the best movie that we ever did, I think, was Incredibles.
Okay.
We haven't done like Fern Gully. I have two questions for you here. Mm-hmm. What was your favorite movie from childhood that we've done so far? And let's start with that one, because mine obviously is Three Ninjas, but what's that for you?
Maybe Space Jam.
Even over Harry Potter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Space Jam, Space Jam, I have such a special memory with, and we've done Space Jam, which is also a good episode.
Yeah. Also The Parent Trap, you know, that one stayed with me so much as a kid. And last thing I want to ask you is, what's one movie or a few movies that you're just, how have we not done this and it's coming in season four?
Fern Gully. Definitely. I mean, there's one that we are going to do in November, but I will say that. That's absolutely the other one.
I would say Shrek 2 specifically. We actually almost did Shrek 2 this year, but just timeline, we didn't get to think about the best way to do it. But Shrek 2, would love to do it. Brink and a lot of the DCOMs we haven't done yet. I'm surprised. Sure. Catch That Kid. I thought Catch That Kid we would have done by now. But
I thought so too. We'll get
not
it.
Not quite yet. And next year is the 25th anniversary of Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain. That's happening, Trevor. So buckle up for some Hulk Hogan good times.
All right. Well, anything else we want to say before jumping into our 100th episode with The Girls Who Cried Be Horror?
No, I'll just sign off by saying, guys, you know, this really just turned in. It started out as a distraction. You know, Trevor and I were both kind of down in the dumpster in quarantine, and this is something that it gave us something to look forward to. It gave us a chance to be creative. So whether you've listened to one episode, whether you listen to all of our episodes, whether you've tweeted at us once, whatever, like I really appreciate the opportunity to do this. Trevor, thank you for giving me this outlet and working with me. It's great to just know that at least once a week or once every other week, you and I get a chance to just talk about things that really matter to us as friends and as movie lovers. So thanks for doing this. Thanks everybody for listening. That's what I have to say. So thank you again, Trevor.
Like I said, we've went through a lot of changes and through life, and there's been a lot of consistency, but I'm, in the last 2.5 years, but I'm glad this has been one of the consistent things, and let's do another 2.5 years.
Absolutely. You know where to find me. All right. That's going to wrap it up for this intro. Thank you once again for listening. Let's kick it off to our official 100th episode on The Little Vampire. Thanks for listening. Trevor, if you want to record another 100 episodes with me, just whistle. You know how to whistle, right? Well, that's a good sign. You got us for 100 more episodes. Hey, everybody.
Just push your lips together and blow.
that's a line from something.
An SNL like skit, I think.
All right. Well, you got us for 100 more episodes. Yeah. Trevor approved it. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the official 100th episode of the Old Kids Movies. I am AJ Beltis. I am here, as always, with Trevor Howell. You're the rookery to my Rudolph, I think, because you always ruin my good times.
I you're good. That's true. But at least I have tons of gadgets and everything to play with. I have a grappling hook. I have a I have a batarangs and vampire garlic shits. I got all this stuff.
You do. And you brought a guest with you.
We both brought a guest with us. We have one half of the girls who cried V horror. We have one girl. who cried V horror. Anya, welcome once again for another Halloween episode of the old kids movie. I'm trying to think of a pun. The old spooky movies.
Don't hurt yourself. Don't really hurt yourself doing that. Hi, I'm so happy to be back. Alex wished she could have joined us, but as anyone with migraines understands, sometimes they come up out of nowhere and they really take you out. So sadly, she can't be here today, but I have some of her thoughts and feelings she'd like to share on the movie that I can disperse in for you guys along the way.
I'm really excited to hear her opinion because knowing her takes on Scooby-Doo 2, I'm very excited to hear her takes on Lord. Anya, thank you for representing the excellent pod that you're on. Where can we find you? And if you want to give a brief description for those who are still unaware of what you all talk about.
Well, if you still live under a rock.
I know, right?
But yeah, we're on all the same, I believe, podcasting platforms that y'all are on. So we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Music. I believe we're also on like Amazon Music or whatever the hell that is. We're on all of them. If you just search us, you'll find us. And we are the Girls Who Cried Before. We release an episode once a month, along sometimes with a scattering of mini-sodes along the way. But pretty much we focus on the horror movies, which are usually movies that tend to be more low budget, lesser known, campier, a combination of all those things or whatever. Oh, yes, you usually have a really fun time doing it. You guys have been on. You came on recently for two episodes in a row, actually, for our Halloween episode of Troll 2 and for The Gate. But yeah, we like to keep it light and fun, but also because we are two female horror fans, we oftentimes, not even intentionally, but just because it comes up in the conversation, usually discussing viewing these movies from a female perspective and how that's aged and, you know, looking at things from that light. Because a lot of the times, I think in general with film, a lot of critics and reviewers and people that want to share their opinions are men. So I think it's nice to have that female perspective in the bunch.
Listen, all I care about is you guys love House of Wax, so I trust your judgment implicitly.
Thank you so much. You actually, we might have talked about this before, but when you, for your opening, when you said, purse your lips and blow, that is a line in the Friday the 13th remake from 2009, which I also
love.
Wait,
what part?
Okay, so remember when they're in, like, the cabin and, like, the one guy is, like, really hot for the girl that was, like, doing this, like, was making out with, like, the moose head? And she has, like, some sort of shot glass where it's, like, on fire. So she's yes. like, oh, like, can you help me how to drink this? She's like, yeah, you just, like, purse your lips and blow. And then he puts it to his mouth yeah. and he burns his lip. Yeah.
That's probably what it was, because that's low-key a movie that I'll watch once a year. I really like the 2009
remake. I love that movie.
I mean,
it's low-key my favorite Friday the 13th movie.
Much fun.
Yeah, literally.
Well, the original is like the Bacall Bogart movie, right? That's like the original line or the line that people keep referencing to have and have not.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, well, that's where that line originally was. Okay, yes. Absolutely. Funnily enough, that was a throwback to our 50th episode, and I knew that sounded familiar because Alex and Sharon mentioned that in the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids episode that we did for our 50th episode.
Yeah.
We doubled our episodes, but it comes full circle.
It comes full circle, but everyone jokes about that line. I think that's probably the first iteration of that line is the Bogart-Bacall combo. And
I knew that sounded familiar.
Yeah. Anyway, we're not talking about whistling today, and we're not talking about how to whistle. We are talking about vampires, and one vampire in specific, the little vampire, even though there are many vampires in this movie. But we brought this movie up because we wanted to find a movie to do with the girls who cried be horror, even if no matter how many of them could make it today. And I know AJ had a bunch of great ideas and will eventually do them, but I am not as familiar with them as I was this movie because I have a very specific memory attached to this one. And I think it could be kind of fun to do this. And I know we're doing a DCOM next week. So
actually, we're not.
We were not.
It's not a DCOM. It's an ABC Family Wonderful World of Disney movie.
okay, so we're doing a DCOM next week. and I didn't want to do another DCOM or ABC, wonderful, whatever the hell it's called. So I chose this movie because we just did. Did we just do an animated movie? Am I making this up? Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't want to do another animated movie because so we just did it. So basically our
so basically Trevor tells us what movies we're doing.
Just no, but whatever you want.
As always, whatever
Trevor's
you want.
Trevor's holding us at gunpoint to do The Little Vampire.
We're doing The Little Vampire. We are doing all of Jonathan Lipnicki's movies. There's not that many of them, and we will talk about him. Yes, we will. But let's talk about our history first with The Little Vampire. AJ, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this was a movie that I did not see in theaters, but I've mentioned this kind of approach. I think for a lot of us, especially, you know, we weren't born to see a lot of movies. Like, I didn't see a lot of movies in theaters around the year 2000. I was too young. My parents weren't really taking me. But this was a movie that I caught glimpses of on Disney Channel and ABC Family. This was just the approach until I had kind of pieced everything together. But I think one of the first times, if not the first time, that I ever sat down to watch this movie in full, Trevor, you're going to love this. Okay. I was at, do you remember it's not the Dedham Mall. I think it's the Dedham Plaza. It was across the street from the Best Buy in Dedham. You know what I'm talking about? There's like a Domino's in there. There was like a Payless Shoes. It was where like the Starbucks was and the Star Market. You know what I'm talking about? It's literally across from the Best Buy.
Okay. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Back in either 2008 or 2009, it was either a Strawberries or an FYE.
Oh, okay.
And I was hanging out with some friends my freshman year of high school, and we went to the Friendlies there. And then after the Friendlies, a few of us went over to this DVD store before my mom picked me up. And I saw that The Little Vampire was there for $6. And I was like, it's $6. I'll get it. Why not? And I think I probably watched the DVD once or twice until I just watched it again for the episode. But that was the first time that I think I ever sat down and in full, end-to-end, watched Little Vampire. But man, if this movie in like 2002, 2003... was on ABC Family or Disney Channel, I was watching for the scenes where Jonathan Lipnicki went up to those bullies and went, out of my way, losers. I was watching for any of the parts where Anna Popplewell was confessing her love to Jonathan Lipnicki. I mean, I loved all of like the rookery stuff. I loved the tone. I was a really, really big fan of this movie. Ironically, I would say up until I bought the DVD and got into high school, and then it just kind of naturally phased out. But yeah, this... if we're talking about nostalgia, the first 3 seconds of this movie, when they started holding up the amulet and saying the chant, I was like, oh my God, this movie. I know this movie. I love this movie. And everything came flooding. I knew the chant. I knew the grant. I knew everything.
Oscar nominee, Richard E. Grant.
For one of the worst movies of that year, my God.
What are you talking about?
Can you ever forgive me?
Yeah,
no, Melissa McCarthy, I can't forgive you for wasting 2.5 hours of my time. Get the fuck out of here.
I
saw it at your theater, too. I want a refund, Trevor.
Anya, save us from that fine, from that bad take.
Well, similarly, I mean, this was definitely a movie that I was excited to cover because it was a big one from my childhood. The last time I watched it was actually it was my semester at the Emerson Los Angeles campus, and we were all miserable, and me and two of my best friends who I was living with, we got McDonald's and we laid on like the hard concrete floor and watched it off a laptop. And I think we were just like talking in the whole time. So I literally don't even remember anything. So that rewatch, I just remember we watched it. But kind of similar to what AJ was saying, there was so much of this movie before I even turned it on where I was like, I know there's things from this movie that are going to knock the wind out of me because I'm going to be like, oh my God, flashback to like talk about member berries, like the whole movie.
Yeah.
There wasn't specific lines or anything. There were things that I was like, oh yeah, like the whole plot point of like the vampires want to become humans. I forgot that. But visually, which I'm sure we'll talk about, there is a lot of like visual like props or moments and just like people doing physical things that were so ingrained in me that I rewatched it and I was like, nothing about this is inherently like so satisfying, but to my brain, I'm like, oh, fuck yes, I would watch this.
Was it the vampire cows?
It was not the vampire cow, sorry to say, but I did remember that. I was like, something happens with the cows. They drink the cows and something happens. And then like the first time he opens up the bar door, I was like, oh, right, this shtick.
Did you hear Trevor laughing in your head when they kept having more and more cows inside the barn?
Ooh, yeah.
Because I heard him laughing all the way from Boston. I was like, what's that sound I hear? Oh, it's Trevor cackling at the cows in the barn and the music kicking
I heard Trevor squealing when they were hanging upside down like bats.
I actually didn't laugh. I did squeal at one point pretty loudly. And I think that's when I saw Amanda put up headphones on for work.
Was it the cow poop?
It was not the cow. It wasn't the cow poop. I will talk about the cow scene and my reaction to it. But there was one specific line that got me that I just thought was preposterous. And I loved it. Actually, there was a few moments, but. So you generally had a positive recollection and also a fairly recent rewatch, Anya.
Me? Yeah. I mean, I will say
3 years ago,
it's one of those things where it's like, I will always have love in my heart for this movie for the reasons that I said, because like, I'm pretty sure I owned this on VHS. And when I think back, I watched this a handful of times growing up. Of course, it's one of those ones where it's like, I won't say that, and I'm sure you guys feel this way because you obviously your whole thing is revisiting a bunch of kids' movies. It's sad when you rewatch one of these movies and you're like, at least my feeling about it was like, it's not a good movie. It's not a good movie. But there are a lot of things from it. And it's one of the things where it's like, if I had never watched this before, like I can't speak for Alice because I didn't talk to her about it. I don't know if she's obviously not here, but I don't think she had seen this before. I think it was a similar Scooby-Doo 2 situation.
Yes, so it was. Yeah, she told me. I was like, oh.
That would have been interesting to hear. But I think because I did watch it as a child, even now as an adult with a more formed brain, I can be like, yeah, not a good movie. But I can't overtly be like, awful, god awful, can't sit through it, because so much of it is like nostalgia for me.
Right. Great so I guess pretty different takes on this or histories. Mine, I mean, I've seen this movie exactly once, but the memory is so ingrained in my head because it's only happened one other time where my dad said, I really want to see the little vampire. And he's never been like, oh, let's get together as a family and watch a movie. But for some reason, the little vampire, he wanted to watch it. He rented it. He went to the store and rented it, got pizza, made popcorn and everything.
Aww.
We all sat down and watched The Little Vampire. He was so excited for this movie. I don't know why. The only other time that this has happened was for Nickelodeon's Barnyard, which is a terrible movie.
Oh my God. I gotta revisit Barnyard.
It was for some reason he was like, oh, we're gonna watch Barnyard. I wanna watch it. It felt like he was rallying the troops together, like, come on, everybody. But we're just sitting down and watching The Little Vampire, and he had a great time. I think I enjoyed it at the time as well. But when I turned this on, and I was 5 or 6 at the time when I watched it, and I remembered pretty much 70% of it, because I feel like the images are pretty memorable. The acting, I would say, has aged probably the worst, but the rest of it pretty much aged as well as I remembered it, surprisingly.
Depends on whose performance you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree there. That's sort of my history. And I couldn't find too much history on the actual film, AJ. Did you find a little bit more?
No, not really. Other than it was based on a kid's series and a kid's series of books. It was not American, and they made an American and an English speaking adaptation. But this was based on, I guess, a pre-existing property franchise, whatever you want to call it. There were multiple different entries, pieces of media made about The Little Vampire years before they ended up making it. There was a 13 episode TV series that wasn't English, but it was a Canadian, German and UK series that aired in the 80s. And of course, there was a series of children's books that came out with Little Vampire. What the similarities are, I frankly didn't look into, and I'm not sure.
Funny enough, if you want another kind of throwback to our 50th episode, Carrie Kirkpatrick is a writer on Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves. Not Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, but he's one of the writers. He's also a writer on James and the Giant Peach.
That's like saying Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is a throwback to the original.
Sure, I guess you could kind of make a weird jump of totally different things there.
That's basically what you did.
No, I was saying that like it's kind of a throwback to Honey, I Shrunk by the writer of this movie is also the writer of another Honey, I Shrunk the Kids movie. Anyways, that's that. Also, a lot of them returned for the sequel or the remake, the animated remake.
Just
which is interesting.
Two people.
They did?
The writers.
And, oh, okay, oh. Sorry. The cast, it was just the mom and one other person who I'm forgetting.
Whatever, the guy from Downton Abbey, not Richard
Jim Carter.
Jim Carter, yeah, he returned.
Yeah. So a couple other things before we jump into our thoughts. This movie came out on October 27th in the year 2000. So this is celebrating its 22nd anniversary of The Little Vampire. Surprisingly, this one actually did throw me off, because maybe it's this does. You know what? Maybe it doesn't, now that I say it out loud, because I didn't see it in theaters, but I loved it on TV growing up. Didn't do too well at the box office. It had a $35 million budget, which when you look at this movie, it does kind of make sense. They did have a good commitment to production design. Only grossed $28 million. Maybe it was, this wasn't a Disney movie. And I feel like if Disney put their oomph behind it, if you will, it probably would have done a little bit better, but it was a New Line movie. And it wouldn't surprise me if Disney was like hesitant to allow it to be advertised on their networks and stuff. I don't know, but it didn't do that well. It did well in re-airings, right, but not in theaters.
Cause I didn't see it in theaters. I saw it, we rented it, and I think it did better in the home box office. But I would believe that if this had Disney's The Little Vampire, this mm-hmm. would have done better if they yeah. put like their oomph behind it.
Yeah. And I also wonder if it's because it came out on October 27th, whereas if they got one or two more pre-Halloween weekends, they probably would have done a little bit better with it.
Mm. Yeah. Also, what was it up against that weekend? Do we know?
Meet the Parents and Blair Witch 2. And Remember the Titans.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. The Little Vampire opened in sixth place with $5 million. Damn. Pay it forward. A lot of Haley Joel Osment fans were looking forward to that one.
Do we have any other history things we want to do before jumping into the trailer and then the rest of the discussion?
No, let's fly on into The Little Vampire.
No. Let's bite on in.
Let's take a bite at a little vampire?
Let's
bite on.
Suck
who has ever said
let's
bite on in? Who has ever said that before right now in this moment in history, Trevor?
It was me. Tiebreaker on ya. Come up with a clever pun of how we're going to play the trailer.
And this is The Little Vampire.
Hey, all right.
Ever since Tony's family moved to another country,
this is for being a little creep,
something unusual has been happening.
You have another nightmare?
The vampires were back.
I dreamt it every night since I've been here. The comet, the beam of light, the vampires, and the vampire hunter.
But when he discovers his dreams are real...
You were human.
I saw you in my dream.
His worst nightmare...
Let's see you escape from me now!
...will become his best friend.
Thanks, dude. You saved my life.
Wow, it's great to be a vampire!
We want to become humans, not eat them for dinner.
Together, they'll uncover the secret.
The vampires need a stone, and the magic is complete.
I'll help you find it.
That could save his new friends. New Line Cinema invites you to enter a world where vampires can be your friends.
Hi, my name's Bob.
Kids can become heroes.
Hand it over.
Not without a fight.
And cows can fly. Yeah! The Little Vampire.
Cool.
You already took a page from my member berries, as I see.
Like, duh? What is a Nintendo, duh? No, just when that scene was playing, and we could see the tremendous acting props from Jonathan Lipnicki in that scene, I was like, oh my god, I'm going to die.
And become a vampire?
And become a vampire.
Mm. Wait, we never found out how they became vampires, did we?
They got bitten by vampires.
Is that it? All five of the family members were just out and about. This was a big family reunion, because I think they were all related. And then a vampire just took turns turning them all?
It just seems, I mean, like, it's a movie where, like, they're definitely not going to tell you the lore, because it's for children. And clearly, as we know, there can be very intelligent children's media. This is not one of those cases. So it's unclear if it's, like, were they vampires, and can vampires get pregnant? And did they have, like, a Bella, like, vampire baby three times kind of situation? Or, like, yeah, did everyone at once get bitten?
Well, they said at one point, Rudolph said, when I was 9 years old, so I believe he became a vampire at nine and
yeah,
stayed that.
Yeah, actually, you're right, yes.
But I mean, the actual lore would probably be that one of the family turned into a vampire and then ate the rest of the family.
Bit the rest of the family.
Which is, like, fucked up, because it's, like, if that's the case, they all want to be human. So, like, which member of the family, like, screwed all of them? I guess maybe, like, the punk rock son who, like, low-key they're all annoyed with the whole time.
potentially. Yeah. But I mean, take a look at what happened with Cousin Vaughn and the McGashin family. Like he bit that girl and they were together till the end.
I have thoughts about those flashbacks, let me tell you.
Yeah, right, wait. Well, wasn't there only one flashback?
No, there were a few. I guess the beginning was kind of a story, flashback.
But like they do the flashbacks multiple times.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, let's talk about, before we get to Anya's frustrations, what did we like about this movie? Trevor, what did you like about The Little Vampire?
Rookery, obviously a highlight for me. I think he's goofy, silly, and fun. I like his gadgets. I like the full-on performance that Jim Carter is doing. And I haven't really seen Downton Abbey shamelessly, but I know he's kind of, he seems like a wholesome guy. Like he's
shamelessly or shamefully?
Very important. What did I say?
You said shamelessly.
Shamefully. Wink. I'm not really into period pieces, so I don't think it would be for me, but I'm sure I would enjoy it if I actually started watching it. But Jim Carter, he's like, you know, kind of all, oh, yes, I'm Jim Carter, blah, this thing. But here he's
kind
of
exactly what he says, too. He says the blah.
He is unhinged here as a vampire hunter. I like his haircut. I like his like leather jacket outfit. I like his car. And I like all the gadgets and weapons he has to fight vampires. He has a seemingly endless infantry and armory, or he has an infinite armory filled with gadgets just to kill vampires. And I think it's really cool and fun. And it creates a pretty easy villain for this little cute kids movie that we have.
Is the only thing you liked about the movie?
No, that's my big highlight. We can talk about some other things. I mean, that's my highlight. And I think this movie, it's inoffensive. It is. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily like super wholesome or anything, but it's inoffensive and sweet. So yeah. I think that Jonathan Lipnicki, he just wants to have friends and he feels a little lonely in this new country and his dad's not super spending time with him. And yeah, none of these lessons are super, or none of these issues really get delved deep into. They don't really dig deep onto childhood and growing up or anything, but it's sweet enough that it's fun watching him and Rudolph go on a little flying adventure, landing on a blimp, scaring his bullies, and then like he brings them to the cows and he drinks the cow's blood. There's like nice little fun.
So everything in this movie you like is what you're saying.
No, because there's other things in this movie. I'm talking about one aspect of the plot of the story.
Let's talk Rookery for a second, because okay. I think the
you
best
want me to go over all of my things and then you want to just stop
I didn't
on one
say go over all of your things. I said, what did you like about this movie? But let's start with Rookery, because I was concerned. I wasn't sure where you'd land on him. But what I'll say about Rookery is I like the fish out of water humor we get. I like his really gnarly, nasty, almost like biker bro approach that he has, like storming into these meetings with Lord McAshton. And when he's shoving Tony into the grave and the coffin, he's like, you can't do that. He's just a child. And he's like, oh, get out of my way. That's a vampire. And I kind of enjoy the dichotomy that we get between those two characters and him when he's almost seen as inept at the end of this movie or towards the end of the movie and can't get his shit together. I thought that was funny. And I mean, I liked him butting heads with the graveyard proprietor, whatever you want to call him. Yeah, there's a lot to like about his character and the situations he ends up in.
Anya.
Yeah, I mean, because I had memory of him from watching it as a child where I was like, I did not like him, which I guess is the point. Like, he is the villain of the movie. He's fucking scary. Because he's like this, yeah, he's like, you know, this big, burly guy, and he's like, he's the villain. As a child, and even now, you're supposed to watch it and root for the vampires, like the little kids, and oh my god, he's so scary, he's gonna lock them away, he's gonna hurt them. But I don't know, I can watch it now and be like, no, he's giving debatably the best performance of the whole movie. Like, he knows what his bit is, he knows what his character is, and he's like committing and like doing something fun and unique with that. His character overall, and I think against his performance in the movie, I don't know if I want to get into this because it's like technically a dislike, I guess. But I don't know, like AJ referenced him like locking him in the tomb, which is like really, really scary. Also, like, he low-key uses a gravedigger as bait at one point to get bitten by a vampire, which that specifically I remembered. I was like, that was so messed up to me as a child. I was scared. Which, once again, I watched it as an adult and I'm like, no, like, I get it. It works the character. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know how to fully put it into words, but as I think I've talked to you guys about on one of our podcasts at this point, I love children's media and I like children's media that low key like is a little disturbing or that will like haunt you. I love Coraline. I almost wanted like more commitment from this or less. Like, I feel like they present this really scary character and then give him situations to do like really scary things. And almost I'm like, I wish it traumatized me more, you know, because like he locks him in the tomb, but he's in that tomb. There's somehow light still getting in. He's not fully in the dark in there. And he's out of that.
They left the little corner open.
Yeah, he's out of that tomb pretty quick. The gravedigger thing is like, and once again, I get that it's for children, but I'm like, let's just traumatize the kids a little bit. If you're going to have him go full, like, scary biker vampire hunter dude and, like, really instill fear in your children audience, then do it. I don't know. The half-assery of it, for me as an adult, I'm like, well, now I have different issues with it. I feel like as a kid, I was like, I don't like him because he's too scary. And now as an adult, I'm like, I don't like him because he's not scary enough.
Yeah.
I like that it kind of toes the line. And this is where I know like Trevor and I kind of fall on different sides of the coin. But I like how we get teases of it. I get how there is legitimate danger, but you're never too concerned. I mean, kinder trauma, the scene where he's like screaming like, no, no, don't lock me in this. That was terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
But we just got, you know, just a little glimpse of that. And then everything ends up okay pretty quickly. I feel like there were movies when I was 0 to 10, that if one scene really fucked me up, I wasn't watching that movie ever again. This scene didn't do that for me. And I feel like if any scene of the movie would, aside from one that I'll talk about in the next section, I feel like it would have been this one. And the fact that it didn't affect me that way, I feel like I appreciate that they didn't go too far, because they knew they were trying to make a goofy kids and family movie. They weren't trying to kinder trauma kids too hard. And I appreciate that.
I think part of it is the tone of this movie just goes in way too many directions.
Yeah. That's also true.
Part of it is silly vampire cows, and the other is, oh, this kid's a vampire. You need to stab him with the stake 3 times, the blunt force of the axe. 1, 2, 3. Shit like that, where you can try and get dark, but you can't have both of those things in the same movie and expect me to take it seriously or expect me to get on board with the jump of tone.
Yeah, I think that's something we'll all kind of come to the consensus of, is that this movie overall is totally inconsistent at best.
Yeah, and it's interesting what you said, AJ, because it makes sense that I think probably for most, I don't want to say like normal people, but obviously when you watch a movie, you're like, I don't want it to traumatize me to the point that I don't want to watch it anymore. And it's like, so the scene is too scary, especially as a kid. I'm definitely not going to revisit it. I think because as we know, I'm a big horror person. I've always been a spooky little girl, that I think even as a kid, those things that traumatized me, I was like, oh no, I'm traumatized. I'm having nightmares. I'm thinking about it and it's bothering me. When is the next time I can see it? I have to see it again. I don't know if that was like exposure therapy type shit I was trying to do, but I think we were built different, clearly.
Okay, well, what are some other general positives?
I want to talk about some of the acting that I think really did work well for me. So there were two performances that I did enjoy. Rollo Weeks is good. The kid who plays Rudolph. I think he gives a nice performance. I actually feel like the whole vampire family actually does pretty well. You've got the gothic older brother who I completely forgot about. I enjoyed his character. I enjoyed his performance for what it was. I thought the mom and the dad, Richard E. Grant, again, very committed performances. I appreciate that, what they were doing. Anna Popplewell, the character of Anna, just having a crush on Tony and reading poetry. I liked both the performances and the characters of pretty much everyone in this vampiric family. So that was where I actually, I liked the vampires more than the humans in this movie.
Yes.
I wanted to mention that.
Because you can kind of take Uncanny Valley acting as, oh, they're vampires from the 16th century or something.
Yeah. And Richard E. Grant and Rollo Weeks were the two standouts for me.
I agree.
I also agree. Rudolph is fantastic. I don't recall having a crush on him as a child, but if you told me that I did, I'd be like, yeah, that tracks. That makes sense. I mean,
the guy's 309 years old. You probably don't like people that old at that age.
No, he's a little old for me. Yeah, I mean, he's to me, it's like what the difference between him and Jonathan Lipnicki, is that how you say his last name?
Yeah.
Who's not giving a good performance, spoiler, is he's still reading as a little kid to a certain degree, but like he's obviously playing like a 300-year-old whatever, and like that somehow works too. Like, I think a perfect scene for him is the scene when they break into the bullies' rooms at night.
I am the Lord of the Underworld. I am your master.
It's Tony Thompson? Get him!
I don't think so. I am the fiendish friend of Tony Thompson. If you do not treat him with respect, you'll feel my wrath! Tell anybody what you have just witnessed, and you will be bat bait.
What on earth is going on in here?
Nothing!
It's still like silly and light enough to be like, this is a little kid playing a vampire, but like not so much where it's like, this is a little kid they picked up off the street who's never acted before in his life. It's a believable little kid performance.
Yeah.
Yep. I agree.
I agree overall about the vampire family. They're easily the best part of the movie acting wise. Also like their most interesting characters, obviously they're the vampires, but little Miss Anna Popwell, who plays Anna in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was her acting or something about the character, because I know that you seem to really like her whole bit with like the reading of the poetry and the automatically being in love with him. It reminded me, and like not quite in a positive way, of Hanini from Chowder. I don't know if you're familiar.
I know, like, the show. I haven't seen the
so I'm sure really. There's people in your audience that know what I'm talking about, but in Chowder there's sure. One of the other apprentices who is like a female bunny rabbit, I think she is. I'm not really sure what she is. Named Panini. She's in love with Chowder. So the running bit is that she like wants him to be her boyfriend. And he's always like, I'm not your boyfriend. So she's like, hi, Schnookums. Like always is so in love with him. And it's in that cartoon kind of way. It like works and it's really ridiculous and funny. Where like here it kind of felt like random to a certain degree. Like it was just kind of like out of nowhere. And I sometimes have issue when it is IRL real children actors and in roles where I'm like, why are we forcing romance? Like I remember at the end of Stranger Things season one, I was really pissed off when they made Eleven kiss Mike. I was like, why? Why can't they just be little kid friends? Why does there have to be romance?
Spoiler alert.
That's on.
Yeah, that show is 6 years old. Yeah. Back off.
But especially in a movie that is perfect for LGBTQIA plus History Month, because it is inherently gay. This is an inherently gay movie. I'm not even making a joke. So them trying
a lot of Letterboxd reviews were saying that.
Yeah. Exactly. And so for them trying to force this like little girl, little boy, straight romance, stop.
I agree with that. And I think kind of vampires in general, what they kind of are turning into, at least in popular media. Well, some of the oldest, I think, vampire films are LGBTQ sort of friendly or queer-coded movies. I was reading this book of essays, and it had a lot of criticism towards subtext in, or like, not like criticism against it, just like film criticism about the subtext in vampire movies and some other old movies in this genre. Obviously, it did not talk about the little vampire, but yeah, I totally get that. I'll be curious to get in on this Letterboxd review train, but I still don't know my I don't know my Letterboxd password.
Letterboxd, I would kill myself.
I'm locked out and I don't know how to get back. Well, I do know how to get back in. I'm just lazy.
Well, it's really interesting you bring it up, Trevor, and I feel like I have somewhat, I wouldn't say expertise, but knowledge on this because it is a horror based thing.
Yeah, too.
You're absolutely correct in the sense of like so much of vampire media is queer coded. And I think you can say that about a lot of monster media, about a lot of horror movies, because a lot of horror movies in general obviously focus on the subject of the other, which is the scary.
Yeah.
Which is why a lot of the times horror is a really safe space for people that are considered other or are on the outside, whether that be, you know, queer people, people of color, everything under that umbrella, because they in real life feel like the other, which I think all leads into this. And it's something I really like about the movie. take all the queer subtext, if you'd like, out of the statement. But I like that this movie, for however, you know, not great it is, it's a movie that does highlight the innocence of, like, childhood and how you so readily just accept the other and things that are different when you are that young. Like, it's kind of the whole statement that people say all the time where, like, hatred is taught, essentially. Like, you aren't born hating a certain kind of person. And I think it's a perfect example because, like, obviously this grown, grizzled guy is the guy that's like, yeah, we gotta kill vampires, blah, blah, blah. And, like, meanwhile, this little boy, a vampire, appears in, like, his bedroom in the middle of the night, and he immediately accepts him as, like, you know, he's afraid a little bit because he doesn't know anything about him. But he accepts him as his friend and he helps his family. And he is the one, like, fighting for them and, like, having their backs the whole time, which I think is very sweet and innocent. And I think the idea overall in a story of twisting that narrative to have the vampires be the good guys, where the ones that are the innocents are the ones that you root for, and having the vampire hunter, which obviously in, like, other types of media from way back when, you know, the vampire hunter, Van Helsing, all that, like, was the hero. He's the one saving the damsel in distress.
Right.
That switch be like, no, he's this greasy kind of living out of his truck, creepy dude. And, like, we hate him, is a really interesting twist. And I like that overall about this movie.
And just to kind of piggyback, like, I totally agree on all that. And the fact that it doesn't dive too deep into all the other issues with childhood and coming of age movies, it doesn't get too deep into that. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I feel like the result of this movie and what this movie is, that's basically what they intended it to be. It's based on this small little children's book, and they're not really trying to say anything super profound. They do say some cool things, but they're not trying to be like the best kids movie ever made. I feel like they just had this idea of trying to adapt this. And it wasn't going to reach the same level of, like, Harry Potter or like Chronicles of Narnia. Some of the big, you know, the big boys. It's not going to reach that level, or even like a Roald Dahl series or something. But they did their best, and I think they get to play around a little bit with this. What you were saying is befriending people. What?
You said it did its best?
I feel like it did its best. What? You don't think so?
No.
What? I feel like it did its best. I mean, if it did something else, I don't think it would be what it was trying to do. I just don't think what it's trying to do is that necessarily overall interesting.
I don't think I fully agree because...
You don't think so?
I mean, I agree with you in the sense of, like, yeah, it's not trying to reinvent the wheel. Like, while you were talking, I was thinking of a movie that's absolutely not a children's movie that kind of takes this plot and does it better, obviously, is Let the Right One In, with the whole, like, child and then a child vampire. And it's like, we're both outsiders.
Anya, yes. It's Let Me In. Come on. We're in America. What are you doing?
Oh, enough. Isn't Chloe Grace Moretz remake? Lord of Mercy.
Oh, is that a remake? Oh my God.
And the lanky kid from Power of the Dog.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. I think, contrary to what you're saying, like, yes, it doesn't need to go into every issue of childhood. I wasn't expecting, like, some profound, deep Stand By Me childhood moments in this.
Sure.
But I do think even a scene in which, because it's so obvious, then it's like, why wouldn't you have this? But I guess, as AJ and I are implying, this movie is not doing its best work. Even if there's just, like, a scene between the two boys in which they're talking about kind of being the other. Like, this little boy is a vampire. He's inherently hated. He's hunted his whole life. All he wants to be is human and be accepted and be able to come into the light. And this other kid just moved here. He has no friends. He's being
They
bullied.
Did say that. They did have that scene.
When does this happen?
This happens. He said, you know, you don't know what it's like to be tormented your whole life. And he said, yeah, I do. I have bullies. Oh, you have bullies? And then they torment the bullies.
Oh my
the
God, scene does that's happen. Not what yeah, I'm they... saying. That is so fucking, like, a two-sentence exchange.
But they have it. Like,
it's that's no, they're not doing their best. That's what
okay,
I'm telling
fine,
you.
Okay, fine,
if that's
We needed
best...
Benny King singing in the background.
Exactly. I was like, they should have had, like, a nice, sweet, tender moment. If this was made today, get the director of fucking Luca in here and let them have their tender moment.
Wait, did you like Luca?
I didn't see Luca.
Yeah, why did you not like Luca?
I mean, it was fine.
I mean, I was like rallying in the streets, like, five-star movie Luca.
Oh, like, okay.
AJ hates
I was like,
movies, so, you
Vespa,
know.
Vespa, really?
Yeah, was cute. It was fun. I liked it. I mean,
this is fine.
I don't think about it often after I've seen it.
Exactly. I mean, sea monsters, you're just stretching.
It wasn't the best. Anyway. It wasn't the best.
All right, yes. But
let's move on to other things we like, though.
Trevor, I really want to know why you weren't cackling during the cow moments.
We'll talk about it in the next section. Things we like.
I enjoyed the cow moments. I liked the goofy music, the kind of, that, you know, that he goes out and looks at his farm and his land, and there's one less cow every day, and the da-da-da-dun-da-dun-da-dun-da-dun music plays.
I'm like, surprised you like this.
There's one less cow, and then the eyes light up red. It was, and then it's Trevor, rule of thirds: one cow, then the second cow, and then the third time they're all upside down, and yeah, they all just kind of hiss at him.
I liked the fact that they were all missing, but the effect, the stupidness of the cows upside down, the effect was horrible, and I think that's what ruined it for me. It was like some of the worst effects I've ever seen.
You didn't like the Goosebumps glowing eyes?
It was Goosebumps glowing eyes. They were computer-generated. It was like really the only super glaring computer-generated thing in this movie, but it looked really bad.
The bats looked great.
What are you talking about?
No. Here's what anything I'll say. Flying, they were obviously computer generated, but I think given the year 2000 and the budget this movie was working with, it was not like holy shit awful. Like I was like, yeah, it is what it is.
Yes, I completely agree.
All right, that's fine. But I didn't like. I didn't laugh. I thought it was stupid. I was like, Jesus. I actually wrote, I'm out.
Oh my god. I liked the makeup. Nope. I thought the makeup was good.
Yeah,
I
liked the vampire makeup.
Yeah.
Yes, I liked that they were kind of gray.
I do like the vampire makeup. They looked fabulous.
I have a couple quotes I'll save until the end of this section, but I also just want to say I think the strongest part of this movie, like I was honestly probably 1.5-2 stars until the end. The last 20 minutes kind of picks up. The last 20 minutes is kind of good. The whole stretch of them trying to get the medallion or the amulet or whatever back to the vampires. The moment when Tony realizes the stone is in his room, all the way up until he's the one who, for some reason, has to hold it up and save the day. I like that Rookery came back for one last like hurrah to block the moon. I thought that was cool because I thought it was over. And I was like, oh, he comes back again. That's kind of cool. They do push it one more time.
How did
and
the blimp the way fly they back do it. Up, though?
You know what? We don't ask these questions. Oh, because he probably cut the car loose. He cut the car loose. And he
oh, the car loose. Up. Okay.
I'm assuming that's what it was. I liked the final stretch. It was dramatic. There was some good comedy. There's some good quotes that I have to say in here. And I think the last 20 minutes of stretch of this movie was almost enough for me to, you know, to get it to a certain star rating on Letterboxd. I'll talk about that at the end. But yeah, I thought this was a good part. Good stretch.
Something I brought up earlier, which I think I insinuated was going to be a dislike, but it's not a dislike at all. It's a like, are the flashbacks. There's obviously the opening flashback where it's like all of them on the cliff and that's how you kind of start the movie. But when they go back to the flashbacks and it is, forgive me, I can't recall her name, but the woman that essentially gets the amulet and then turns into a vampire and it's her vampire lover.
Lady McAshton.
Yes. Let me tell you, those flashbacks, sexy as hell. No. I was like, oh my God. Whatever his name is, her vampire lover, fine. He is fine.
What exactly happened? Did they get?
He essentially like found him washed up on the shore, saw his amulet, and then there's a scene of waking up, and then we're kind of told essentially that they fell in love, and I guess he turned her into a vampire, so they could probably be together forever. And then they were hunted, so she had to hide the amulet. And da 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 da. But going off of that, because you kind of mostly see it in the flashbacks and when we were with the vampire family, love the costumes. I absolutely wanted to look like that and dress like that. I have to find it. When you're wet as a vampire, but like a vampirist for Halloween, and it's so fierce. And I was living my little vampire fantasy, I think, a little bit. But yeah, I just think there's so much visually, as I brought up, that's really nice about this movie. Like the flashbacks are sexy. The outfits are great. There was one shot in particular that I love, and it's right after Rudolph race into his room and is like 2 weeks and he has to take him to feed on the cows, and they cut and it's him and it's their silhouette and he's pulling Rudolph in the wagon right before sun rises. Beautiful shot. It reminded me, I referenced this earlier, but it reminded me a lot of Stand By Me, when like the boys are walking and you watch them from a distance, and Stand By Me is one of my favorite movies of all time. But yeah, and there was other like possibly referential things visually in this, like when the bat wings fly up behind his head, it's very Jurassic Park raptor moment. And
not raptor, is it Dilophosaurus? Is that what it is?
You would know. I would not.
The one that spits the acid. Dinosaurus.
The one that kills Newman. Yes.
Yeah.
Dinosaurus.
And when the family, they hang upside down, not in coffins and not as bats. It's very The Lost Boys, my favorite movie of all time, which I obviously appreciated. And also the fact that they're in Scotland and he lives in a castle. It's beautiful and it's a dream.
Casually. When I was a kid, I did not question that at all. Yeah. But when I was watching it this time, I was like, how did they get a fucking waterfront castle? How much? Well,
they're building a golf course, so they're
I don't money. Care. I what? Don't care.
Also, castle in Scotland, Trevor? Like, how seriously? Much did you pay for that golf course?
Also, the image of the beam of the comet going into the metal is very much Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Kind of. It's a little and bit of a vampires stretch, but that's what I thought of.
Okay, any other scenes before we give quotes?
I liked the scene where Richard E. Grant vampire and the other vampire, the two like parent vampires, see Jonathan Lipnicki's parents, and they're using kind of their vampiric charm on them.
Oh, yeah, that's fun.
And they're just like, oh, yes, of course. We love Rudolph. I like vampires using charms and just them being so out of it.
Do you think they were using charm, or do you think that they were just enamored / confused?
No, they were using charm.
No, they were definitely using like some sort of vampiric hypnosis, because the bit I feel like of the scene to be funny was like, yeah, that seems right. We won't question anything.
They're okay, aristocrats.
The way that I read it, it was they were attracted to them.
Well, I think that's part of it. I think that's the vampiric charm is like, I have you under this lustful spell. Yeah.
It's lustful spells. But also like, because I thought it was charm because in the next scene, the Lord, whatever, they basically use, or they made him just drop his shit and leave. And then he realized when he got out of the spell, he's like, wait a minute, they weren't aristocrats. They were vampires.
All right. Well, I have one more question. What did we think about the ending?
Oh, like the very last scene? Yeah, when he sees them. It didn't really make any sense, did it?
Well, like, do they remember or don't they?
Did they say anything in the movie about they'd forget who he was when they became human again? And how did they disappear and then become human? And where are they?
How did he get that job?
How did he get that job? Well, just so many questions. But you needed a happy ending. Maybe this was like a test screening thing, and they had two endings, and one of them was just terrible.
Well, I think it even bothered me as a kid. As a kid, obviously, you're like, yeah, they were best friends. I want him to remember. And then it's like,
yeah,
he doesn't instinctually. And then you're like, what? And then he whistles. And then even then, he turns and he's like, dude, like, it's you. Like, he literally just kind of like walks over like, I'm okay to talk to you now. And I'm like, do you remember or not?
No, I think they do.
You don't get the kitty line, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm referencing, right?
Yes, Trevor, Monsters, Inc.
Oh,
AJ
God.
Didn't. That's why I was looking at AJ.
It took me a second. It took me a second, but I got it. That's a heartbreaking line. It also makes me want to cry.
Love that line. Movie's so good.
I love Monsters, Inc.
That's going to be, I'm going to rewatch it and champion how it's a perfect movie, just like I championed Finding Nemo, which
is
just
a perfect movie. Finding Nemo is not a perfect movie.
Oh, whoa.
Fighting words on this show. Finding Nemo's great.
I said what I said. Quickly, I need to know this. What do you think the best Pixar movie is?
We have the same one.
It's Incredibles.
It's Incredibles.
Fine. That's a fine answer. As long as it's not fucking Wall-E, I don't care.
It's not Wall-E, but I like Wall-E quite a bit. Vampires. Okay. Any other scenes before we get into favorite lines and then the rest?
Mm-mm. No, I got a couple quotes though.
Fine.
When Tony notices Rookery coming around the McAshton house, he's like, oh, well, Tony's very excited to hear about your family history, aren't you, Tony? And he's kind of hiding behind his dad. And there's one good line delivery from Jonathan Lipnicki in this movie. He says, not right now, I'm not.
Tony's very excited to hear about your family history, aren't you, Tony?
Not right now, I'm not.
I like the way that he said that. And then when they're driving over to the clan meeting at the end of the movie, you got Richard E. Grant going, it's Gregory, our son. He's calling the clan. And the dad just looks around and goes, yeah.
Yes. Love that.
Darling, do you hear?
Hear what?
They call.
It's Gregory, our eldest son. He's calling the clan.
Yeah,
It's like, yeah, this sounds about right. Okay, I did like the Jonathan Lipinicki line when he said everybody talks weird here when they're driving on the wrong side of the road. And the guy just like yells at them incoherent Scottish accent. I do have a few lines though. And this goes in line with what we were talking about Anna the vampire, when she says something and then she's like, "And I wrote you a poem."
Tony, are you all right?
Yeah.
Dude, you heard me.
I heard you, my hero. And I wrote you a poem.
Who did this to you?
Rookery. We better find Elizabeth's tomb before he does.
It's about the power of love.
Who's Elizabeth?
The last holder of the stone, the woman in my dreams.
Your face saw I in the cemetery, filled with fright.
Rudolph, look!
For the night was scary. Still, you faced the foe, undaunted.
That was the line that actually got me to cackle and just, like, lose it, because it was just...
I liked the poetry!
I liked the poetry, too. It was just kind of nonsense. She was like, "Hello, my love." I'm like, what is going on here?
I think maybe something about her character that irritated me is the fact that I'm sure, like, as a little girl, it would have been like, well, that's who I'm projecting onto. I want to be the little girl vampire. Then to kind of, like, her whole character kind of after she decides that she has a crush on Jonathan Lipnicki, that's, like, the whole thing. And it feels, obviously, like he doesn't really pay attention to that or doesn't care about
her
crush.
He doesn't give a fuck. He does not give a fuck about her.
Certain points can be funny. Once again, I think of, like, the Panini reference to Chowder in the show. Like, part of her personality, too, is she's determined. She's a determined, smart little girl. Sometimes she'll be like, "We're doing this, Chowder. You're going to be my boyfriend," which, like, is funny and works for a character. Whereas this, it almost feels like the joke is always at her expense. I don't want to say she seems dumb, but it's like that's always the bit. It feels like she's like, "Oh, my love, this boy that, like, won't give me the time of day." I'm like, we could have given her something else.
She, like, calls him her hero at one point.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, like, when he was just stuck in a coffin for, like, an hour, she's like, "Hello, my hero." What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's a fair criticism. I won't push back on that.
But it was... I don't think it was egregious. Like, it wasn't offensive.
It's not angering me to the point where I'm like, this is ridiculous. But I'm like, I don't like this character because you're not giving me anything else with her.
No, I liked the bit when she said, like, "If you whistle, like, I can hear it, I can sense it." If only, like, she had, like, specific powers. Like, if each vampire in the family had kind of specific powers where she's sensitive to almost, like, hearing things from distances, and the little kid can fly, and the goth kid can, like, he's, like, super speed. I don't know. Give them, like, little vampire powers. I thought that's maybe the direction they could go with this, but not really.
It would have been awesome if she didn't have to look any different or anything, like, but if she kind of got the personality that the older brother gets, where maybe she's, like, angry, you can still love him and have that crush, but still be like, "I'm a bad bitch. Like, I'm going to step up and do what you want, Dad." But obviously this movie was never going to go there, so.
You're right. There was opportunity. They didn't capitalize on it. Again, no arguments here. Good point.
Do we have any other lines that we want to call out?
Out of my way, losers.
Okay.
God.
Yeah, did you really like when he said, "I am the darkness master"?
No, that... All right, well, I think this is a pretty good transition into what doesn't work about this movie. And I think it's time that we all admit it to ourselves. Trevor, I tried to tell you this in Stuart Little, and I'm pretty sure I got pushback. Jonathan Lipnicki is not a good actor.
No.
I think he was fine in Stuart Little. I
think he was good. You're crazy.
He was good in Jerry Maguire.
I bet that was one thing. He was a cute kid in Jerry Maguire. He didn't have to act in that movie.
He just had to
be a cute kid and say hi, Jerry.
I bet if I rewatched I'd probably also agree. But he was good in Jerry Maguire.
See, I think Like Mike was... I do want to do that for the show at some point. Yeah, we'll... I'm actually surprised. How did we get 100 episodes without doing Like Mike?
We'll do Like Mike.
I feel like that's his best performance. I feel like this is fair play to talk about Like Mike now because it's part of the Jonathan Lipnicki discussion. But I remember this specific scene in Like Mike. Do you remember the scene where Crispin Glover is trying to burn the picture of Jonathan Lipnicki's mom? First off, kinder trauma. But second, he's like, his genuine fear about losing the only picture he has left of his mom.
That's so...
I thought that was good. But it was a good perform. Like, he sold it. It was kinder trauma, but it was good. I think I've said kinder trauma like 8 times in this episode.
It's your favorite word. You said it a lot on our podcast too.
Well, because that movie had some of those moments. He's not good in this movie. He's bad in this movie. He's not a good actor. I'm sorry, Jonathan. You're ripped. You're not a good actor.
Oh, he is ripped now. I forgot that. Alice would be mad at me if I don't share this. Verbatim, she said she wanted me to share this thought. Quote, I will not be gaslit into thinking Jonathan Lipnicki is cute or adorable. Not AJ almost spitting up the water.
Okay. He's a cute kid. I mean, that was the reason why he got... I mean, he was in Jerry Maguire. I almost said Lizzie McGuire. He was in Jerry Maguire because he was cute. And then the cuteness overload in those movies got him into Stuart Little in the sequel, into this, and ultimately into Like Mike in a supporting role. But there's a reason I remember thinking to myself, how did this kid never do more things when I was 10, 11, 12 years old? And now that I'm 28, I look at this movie and I'm like, shit, I know why. Yeah. It's pretty clear.
I mean, what I'll say on the cuteness, because I agree in the sense that, like, yes, he cannot act. That's pretty much proven here, point blank. It's not like, oh, there's one scene or like a one or two line deliveries that fail. It's like every single one, pretty much, is bad.
Every time he opens his mouth in this movie, yeah, it's bad. Pretty bad.
Especially
pretty
when you're putting him in scenes with Rudolph, who is like eating it up. He's selling it. It's so
he's
obvious.
He's a good actor.
Yes.
Now that one's a good actor.
But... I do agree. I mean, it's also been a minute since I've seen Jerry Maguire, but I love Jerry Maguire. I do think he's really cute in that movie. I think in this movie specifically, I don't know how many other things Alex has watched him in. He's not, and this is one of my dislikes of the movie, because I low-key think that he's an asshole in this movie. Like, he's a fucking jerk.
The character?
Yes. Okay, hear me out. Really? Because, yes, he's so fucking annoying. Give this kid that, like, okay, he gets to a new school. He's, like, targeted immediately by these bullies, which we can get to the bullies. That's a whole other thing. And, like, so, yes, you feel bad for him because, like, they're being really mean to him for no reason, and he's in a new place. I understand all that. Then this vampire comes. It's his only friend. He starts fucking pushing the limits immediately. I hated the line. Nintendo, duh. Okay, fuck you. So rude.
And the follow-up is, no, that does when you say when someone asks a stupid question. And Rudolph makes a face of like, oh.
It's just so mean. He's a literal vampire. Why the hell would he know what a Nintendo is?
I need you to answer this question. It's really important to my family. Only if you take me flying again.
Oh my God. That pissed me off so much. AJ, you have no idea. I was like, whoa, are you kidding me?
This is so much fun.
Well, I was literally like waiting for like to them to cut to Rudolph, like holding his hand, just like so annoyed. Like, yeah, like, can you help me now? Like, he's just like a little annoying brat the whole time. And it like really pissed me off where I was like, honestly, yes, no one deserves to be bullied, especially at like the way these two kids were bullying you. But Loki, I'm not surprised you don't have friends. Okay, even the line AJ you were talking about where he shows up to school after meeting Rudolph and then like, sure, I'm all for sticking up to your bullies, especially these bullies, because they were fucking foul. I hated them. Would have snapped them like twigs if it was me. But like, he doesn't have this vampire backing him up. He just like out of nowhere, like kind of like shoves into them and he's like, out of my way, losers.
Out of my way, losers. Sorry,
losers. In what universe was that going to work out?
He makes them, like, crawl to their bed. He's like,
I said crawl.
Yeah. I said crawl. And this is, okay, here's the other thing. The way he delivers every line, it's not only that it just doesn't sound right, but there's two things that happen. One is his facial expressions don't match the tone that he's trying to say it. Like the Richard E. Grant's character is saying like, oh, we need to hide somewhere that's dark and damp. And he has the stupidest, like happy smiles like, oh, then you must be in my cellar. And it the way that you would say that is like the cellar's like, I know just the place, like kind of snarky, but he's smiling like he's a good boy and he's going to get taken to McDonald's or some shit. Not like, yeah. Oh, I have the right answer. And like, wait, I have just the place. Like, it's not an epiphany. It's like, you should try my cellar. It's okay. Have you seen the most recent season of Curb? Your enthusiasm?
No.
There's the character who is like, Curb gets in a situation and he has to cast this young actress in his new show. And she, incredibly talented actor in real life for being able to do this, but the character in the show, she's like the worst actress ever. Every line delivery she has is a different emotion. So like, she'll be saying something that's supposed to be flirty and she says it like menacing and and like threatening to kill you. Maybe I'll send you a clip after. We'll link it in the show notes, because this is Jonathan Lipnicki is Maria Sophia from Curb Your Enthusiasm, the most recent season. I'm sad that no one knows what I'm talking about, but maybe someone will.
Oh yeah, that Maria.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, though, the scene "Then You Need Our Cellar." That scene was one of the few I know exactly when and how this line is said, because I'm pretty sure it was the line before a cut to the trailer or a cut to the commercial when it was on Disney Channel.
Oh, really?
Oh, that makes sense. No, that's fun. Trevor, going off what you're saying, back on this train of like, he's not a good actor. Yeah, beyond the line deliveries, specifically like the emotion he's conveying in these scenes, it's either like none or like, why is that the one? One specifically I wrote down is after Rudolph, like as a bat, like flies into the room, falls into the fucking fireplace he has in his bedroom, crippled ass little kid. And then he's in there. And
in his castle.
In his literal castle, yeah. He walks over, he's very like, what is that? Sees like a literal like dusty gray ancient child in his fireplace. Which I don't care if it was a grown man, an animal, like something that was not in your fireplace 10 seconds ago is in there and it's living and possibly, you don't know what it is. He doesn't react at all. He just walks over and he's just like staring. He's not even doing like a big goofy like, what face? He's just kind of staring at him. And I was like, so you have no reaction to this child being in your fireplace? No, that makes sense.
Okay, but the one other thing I want to mention about, not necessarily his performance, but I guess just in general, the ADR.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's every scene.
It's every scene, and it's typically over Jonathan Lipnicki. AJ, did you notice this?
The one scene in particular that I noticed it was when they were digging for the amulet in his house under the floorboards. And I forget what the, I almost wrote it. Did I write it down? I didn't write it down, but you know, if you actually get a chance to watch this movie, it's not, I don't know if it's streaming anywhere for free. We all had to rent it or use our DVDs. But when they go into the room, the ADR picks in immediately, and you actually see Jonathan Lipnicki's character saying something, but his mouth isn't moving.
Yeah.
So I did pick it up there in particular.
It's there's close ups on him. Mm-hmm. There's literal close ups on him, and his mouth is not moving, but he's saying things. It's so funny.
I noticed it very early on, the ADR, and I was like, okay. I just like kept it in the back of my mind. I'm pretty sure the whole movie is ADR. Like, if you told me that was the case, I'd be like, yeah, obviously. Literally, it's every scene, every character. They use it a lot with the parents. I noticed it. Every line that dad says is absolutely ADR. What was going on the production that like all the sound was unusable?
I bet that his acting was just even worse. Well, it might be the sound, because they filmed in Scotland, which, you know, in a lot of the places, which
is
pretty cool.
Well, like, their scenes were, like, him and dad are on the golf course, right? Where I'm like, maybe it was a little windy that day or whatever. You would hope that on a professional set, I don't know, they'd have maybe better equipment than, like, you know, film school. But I digress. So I get scenes like that, like, okay, it was windy outside, so they ADR'd it. But it's every scene. It doesn't matter where they are. Dead of night, middle of the day, inside, outside. It's all ADR. It's not particularly, like, bad ADR, but it's noticeable.
It's noticeable, which I think makes it bad.
Yeah. Well, if it takes you out of the movie, it's not really doing its job.
The first scene, I think, that Jonathan Lipnicki meets Rudolph in, because I wrote down, like, oh, you're full of blood, and he's like, gonna keep it that way, dude. Like, I like that line. If only the performance was better, I think that line would have gotten a laugh out of me. And I think that's when I was noticing. I was like, man, he's not really a great actor, huh?
Yeah.
And also, like, no hatred towards Jonathan Lipnicki. Like, very, very cute in Jerry Maguire. But it's just, it's hard to be a child actor. I think, like, when you be such, like, an iconic character, or not, like, iconic, but, you know, just, like, a great performance, like, oh, this could be the next child star, and then you try and make it work, it just doesn't always work, you know.
Well, I feel like there's always the question of, like, you know, with these child stars, like, how much of that decision is theirs, you know, like, or how much is it of their parents being like, I want my son to be a star, and like, maybe the kid's having fun, but it isn't necessarily what they want to do with their life when they get a little older and they're like, I don't like this, or I'm not good at this, no thank you.
They, well, frankly, I think that's what happens here. I think that's why we didn't see him carry on his acting career into adulthood. He is in something coming up, though. He's in a new horror movie coming out.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's like Camp Pleasant Lake or something.
What's it called?
Exactly.
Camp Pleasant Lake.
Someone opens up. You know how they have like those horror camps where you can go and actually like live in like a Friday the 13th setting? So someone opens up one of those camps. I haven't watched the trailer. I just saw him promoted on the social media, but apparently he's part of a camp that is one of those experiential slasher movies, and it goes wrong.
That's the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I want to look that up.
Yeah, well, hopefully it should be coming out at some point. Maybe this time next year we can talk about it. Any other negatives that we really want to call out here? I feel like we've kind of talked a lot about the general stuff. Any stupid scenes or lines that we want to just call out? I think just for me, the cow bit. I thought it started out great. And then just the flying cows. That when the cows started flying to break up the car chase, that was just so fucking stupid.
Yeah. The cow poop. Just I was like, is this going to happen? I forget if this happens. Then it happened. I said, I can't believe that happened.
Yeah. Okay. Here's another unintentional laugh for me. Is the first scene when Tony, Jonathan Nicky's character, meets the vampire family. Richard E. Grant picks him up and there's a slide whistle sound effect.
Oh, yeah.
It's like...
Yeah.
And he drops him down. And I'm like, this should not be the sound effect here.
Yeah. Everything in the graveyard regarding the sound effects was terrible.
The fart gun?
There was goofy vampire music intensifies, like when Rookery was attacking the vampires, hated all of that.
Yeah. Alex didn't want me to make mention of that. She said all the little kids were annoying. And she said, but she did like Rudolph best. She said the parents were dumb, which usually that like translates that she didn't like them.
Which parents? The Tony's parents?
I think she means Tony's parents, yeah.
Oh, God, and yeah. The dad was also a bad actor, I gotta say.
Mm. And then she hated the vampire hunter with a passion.
No!
Ooh,
Alex,
wow.
No! Maybe for similar reasons as me. It's just like, I don't know. He gives like a grimy, grody kind of feeling where I'm like, I don't like looking at him. I want him to go away. But she did not specify on why she particularly hated him. Oh, wait. She also hated the dead mouse plot.
Yeah, that was, I didn't like that either.
Which I will bring up in member berries for myself. But she hated, which didn't shock me because when I saw that again, I was like, oh, Alex is going to hate this because she hates anything revolving around dead animals. Less so probably grossed her out and probably made her like sad.
Yeah.
This poor little dead mouse. But yeah, I just wanted to share her thoughts and feelings.
Although I did like the bait and switch at the end that it paid off. It wasn't just, here's this random thing. I liked how that ended up tricking Rookery at the end.
Oh, yes.
It could have been anything but a dead mouse, but, you know, we get our payoff.
From the old country.
What country were they from? Romania? How'd they get to Scotland?
I don't know. They had plenty of time to do it.
All right. Well, I have a question. The vampires and lights. What's the rules here? Are they sensitive or are they not sensitive? Because in the tomb where sunlight was coming in, where after they rescued Tony, there was sunlight coming in. They were fine in that tomb. When Rudolph's parents go into Tony's parents' house, the lights were on in that living room. They're in that living room. Are they sensitive to the light or are they not? Because I don't like how it just shifts randomly. They were walking into the house. I paid attention in that scene.
My take on it is this. I think that in general, with most vampire lore, like artificial light is fine. I think specifically Vampire Hunter having like the light as a cross. And I think it's probably like some special like UV light. I don't know what the hell it was. Hurts them. I think in the scenes that you're talking about where it's like the tomb and the sunlight coming in, it gives me a little bit of like, I don't know if either of you ever watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but there are moments.
I didn't like it.
You didn't like the movie or the show? Vampire Slayer?
I tried. I got through like the first season and changed. Okay. I heard it gets good right after I stopped watching, but I couldn't do it anymore.
You ever seen Angel?
Do you say, have you seen Angel?
Yeah. David Boreanaz.
Me and my roommate started watching Angel and then we stopped because we were trying to do it through Buffy, like a rewatch of Buffy. And we were like, no, because Buffy's always going to be priority. I'm a real vampire expert, but I think in Buffy, like, there was moments where it's just like one of those things we just have to pretend we're not seeing it. For example, like Spike would be like in like a house or their tomb and like sunlight is coming in, he's definitely being touched by it, but they're like, mm-hmm. pretend like that's not happening. No, no, he's actually not being touched by the sunlight, but the window's open and sun is coming in. What are you talking about? And they're like, no, it's not. It's not. And I think that was a little bit of this here, where it's obviously because we have brains in our heads, we can be like, well, there's sun coming into that too. Why are they not afraid of that? And they're like, we don't care to fix that. Just pretend like it's not happening. So I think it was less so like them messing with the lore and just kind of like sloppy filmmaking.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Any other final thoughts on this? Negatives? I kind of said my pieces.
The bad effects were terrible. And
they were fine.
The one scene that I couldn't watch the child, specifically because they actually took it out of TV airings. But then if I ever did rent it, or if it was like, it wasn't on Disney Channel, but it was on ABC Family, was, and this always got to me as a kid when any movie did it, including Scooby-Doo and The Witch's Ghost. But if anybody kind of like flew directly into the camera to break the fourth wall, there were two scenes of Vaughn, the cousin vampire, doing this in the flashback, where he kind of like falls down chasing the amulet and he got his scary vampire face. He gets really, really close to the camera. I couldn't watch that as a kid. I just wanted to pull that out.
Love that.
Wow.
It was too scary. It's too scary.
Well, I'm scared.
I was. Fuck you.
All right. Anya, anything? What did Alex do? General thoughts on this?
Her general thoughts? I mean, I don't think she was a fan. She gave it a 2.5 star rating overall out of 5.
That's not bad.
It's not bad for her, no. I have some of her answers with the things coming up that I can share.
Oh, yeah, great.
But yeah, she said she thought the movie was fine, were her words, the things she already thought were dumb. But she said she was gagged when she saw Richard E. Grant, which I feel like we all were. Mm-hmm. We were like, oh my God, that's right. So she kind of reacted in the way I thought she would, knowing that she hadn't seen this before. I didn't think like she's going to be wowed by this. Like I would have been truly taken aback. She was like, I love that. I kind of figured that like she was going to not like this. So I think honestly, a 2.5 is pretty high rating. Given that
that is pretty high
before. Yeah.
For this specific movie, I'm surprised, which I kind of wanted her take of like, nope, that was stupid. I like her just unabashed hatred towards certain things in movies. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's jump to a drinking game. If you found one.
What about adult joke? Do we not do adult joke yet?
We'll do it after the drinking. Okay. Well, I guess it matters. Let's jump to adult joke first, everybody.
We've always had adult joke before a drinking game. What are you talking about? We've done this 100 times, literally. We've done an adult joke before.
We used to have a vehicle, and there is a vehicle in this movie. It's a silly vampire hunting vehicle.
Let's see. As an adult, I appreciated the line, if I don't get some sleep, then I'll be one of the undead. It's like me whenever I wake up in the middle of the night. I'm like, yep, I need to go to bed right now, not because I'm tired, but if it's 4 a.m., and if I don't get my 2 more hours of sleep, I'm going to die. And then there was also a line where I think the dad said, all of your vampire BS. Yes. That was a lot in a kid's movie. I can't believe they said BS in a kid's movie.
I mean, I guess it's pretty easy to get away with. Think of like a child wouldn't know what that is.
They even make a joke about that in Jack-Jack Attack.
Oh. Huh. I only have one adult joke. And it's when they realize that Rudolph, it's not actually Rudolph and Tony, but Rudolph and Anna, who they think is Tony, are like going off like, well, we have the afternoon alone, and they start like kissing, and he's like, well, I like this Rudolph already, and they're about to smash.
Yeah. I don't know that it's definitely an adult joke. The only thing I come up with is when you're in the third act, when the boys are digging under the floorboards and Rookery is breaking in with like a sledgehammer or something, and he like breaks the door and then puts his face to the door and he says, I'm coming. Which felt like very much like a Shining reference, which once again, like a young audience would not get. It would definitely be for an older audience. That was all that I could come up with.
I don't think there are many others. It's pretty adult joke light.
It's pretty tame.
It's pretty tame.
Who has a drinking game? Because I candidly don't.
Just drink anytime they say vampire. Woohoo!
a drinking game I had and Alex also had is drink or take a shot or finish your drink, whatever the hell you want to do. Every time they do a vampire cow joke.
It's only three times, though. Or a few? Four?
Well, it's spaced out with the three, like, in the barn. And then you could also, I guess, include the scene when they're flying with Rudolph. Because that, I guess, brings it fully full circle. Alex had a drinking game, I believe. She had a few. She said you can drink anytime they say dude, anytime you see a vampire cow, and every time he pretends to be asleep.
Yeah, he did do that a lot, didn't he?
Yeah.
let's move on to Member Berries. And then we can wrap this up.
So many, I feel like.
I know. Mm-hmm. One I want to call out is Tony has a San Diego Chargers poster on his wall. And if you follow football, San Diego Chargers moved to L.A. And I thought it was funny. So they are very much not from L.A. They are from San Diego. Because I think they reference San Diego.
They did say San Diego a couple times.
Yeah. And I just thought it was funny. The Chargers are terrible.
The biggest thing for me, honestly, was the cast. So Rollo Weeks, did you guys ever read the book or watch the movie? This is a deep pull. The Thief Lord.
No.
Never heard of it. Never saw it. Okay. Well, it was a book. It was like really big in probably 2003 or something. And he played the character of the Thief Lord. And it took me probably till I was in high school to realize that they were the same person. Really sweet movie. And they live in like a theater. Anyways, I loved that movie as a kid. I loved the book. I actually read this book several times as a kid, which was a lot for me. And he was in that movie. And I wanted to call that out. Anna Popplewell was Susan in Narnia.
Right.
And then Jonathan Libnicki. I mean, this was a great, great Member Barrett cast. And you also have a ton of people like, you know, Richard E. Grant was in this movie and Jim Carter was in this movie. But I mean, those three kids in particular, each of them have a very specific place in my childhood.
I feel like you guys should finish your Member Barrett because I feel like I have so many that you might
have. I just have Nintendo.
The Nintendo Game Boy. I think the Chargers was the big boy. The Game Boy was me. I mean, I feel like we'll have some similar ones. I think just having reoccurring dreams and also wishing or wanting to kind of befriend some cool magical. I mean, this is almost a story and fantasy about having an imaginary friend, which is a lot of like children's movies are like, it's sort of this actual thing is your imaginary friend or the friend where his mom's like, oh, you have a new friend named Rudolph. What does he do? And you go on your little adventures and the family never actually sees you go on these adventures. That's just a very common thing in childhood, or at least in media, is having that. And I don't remember really having imaginary friends, but I remember hearing that concept a lot. Mm-hmm. I just had a very imaginative, I was just very imaginative. So I imagined a lot of things and my mind just kind of raced and was like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we took these coat hangers and used them as bow and arrows like the Kid Icarus in the video game?
That's it. Should I go down my list?
Yeah, go down your list.
Go for it, please.
Okay.
Babysitters.
So, let's see. Well, one, the desire to fly as a child. I feel like that's really big for a lot of kids. Specifically, it also reminded me, I don't know if you guys ever saw it. They used to play it on like ABC Family. They might still at Christmas time. I believe it's called The Snowman. It's an animated movie. It's like kind of hand-drawn animation. And I feel like it's low-key a silent film. Like there's music that plays over it, but nobody talks in it. And there's like a really beautiful sequence where like, I think it's a young girl. She makes a snowman. You would probably recognize if you looked it up. He has like a glittering little hat and a green scarf and that's it. And they like fly over the town, over like the snow-covered town. And there's just like beautiful song playing. As a kid, when I watched it, I'm like, I don't like this. This is boring. It's one of those things that like I probably wouldn't appreciate like the beauty of it until I got older. But like that's what it made me think of. And just kind of like, yeah, the simplicity of like just like and beauty of like being a kid and like all you want to do is fly. I just want to fly. Like, that's, like, the simplicity of your desires as a child, whereas, like, you get older, you're like, I want $1 million. I want my student loans paid. Where, like, if you ask me as a kid, like, what is the one thing in the world you want to do? It's like, fly. I want to just fly one time. That'd be fun. The big sleep shirt he's wearing, also big Member Berry. I mean, now, I guess, as an adult.
What was it?
His big sleep shirt.
Yes, completely. So the he had, like, a pajama shirt that went down to his almost his feet and it almost looked like a dress.
I thought
his
it oversized said the big sleep on shirt. It. I was like, what? Like,
no. Because, like, obviously, I'm now, like, and I will sometimes, like, you know, still sleep in like an oversized t shirt. But there's something about when you're a little kid, there's a difference between like oversized t shirt, like it covers my ass, and like oversized t shirt, like it's a gown, it's a dress.
Yep.
And like, right. Absolutely. I had so many of those growing up. Me and my sister had somewhat matching. They were like this shimmery, like nylon material, and they were of Spider-Man from the 2000s. You could like walk around the house in it. And like, yeah, Jonathan Lipnicki in this specifically, like, it's down to his feet. And then kind of off of that, which Alex made note of as well, being a little kid and going into your parents' bedroom. I mean, in general, like when you have a nightmare, which is what he does in this.
Totally.
Even if it's like during the day, like going into my parents' bedroom, like even if they were home and they knew I was going in there, and there was something, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it, like magical about that. Like it was this kind of like secretive place of like I'll never quite understand how this room. And then you get older and you're like, it's a fucking bedroom. Like when I go home now and I'm in my parents' bedroom, like it just simply is a bedroom. There's no magic to it. But as a little kid, like yes. That huge bed was always going to be so much bigger than me. Like, oh my God, this place is insane. That sparked something in me. To get more specific to things that really like brought shit up for me, the amulet and the specifically the floorboard that was removed with like the hay or whatever underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. When I tell you like that is the thing I remember from this movie, I wanted nothing more in my whole life than to have a floorboard as a child. And I had carpeted floors in my house. We didn't have any wood floors, but I wanted wood floors so bad so I could have a wood plank that I could move back and hide my secret little trinkets in. And then also the scene where he's just like sitting and doing marker drawings and then cutting out vampire teeth and putting ketchup on them. It's just like one of those simple things where I was just like, yeah, like as a little kid, like you'd be like, I'm gonna go draw now. And not because particularly you were like trying to be an artist. You just did that. You just like, I'm
drawing was a thing you did. It was like an activity.
Exactly.
It's not really anymore unless you are like, you do, that's your hobby. Like I do art, I paint.
The only last thing I was going to say is the song in the credits. My grandma and your grandma sitting by the fire. My grandma said to your grandma, I'm going to set your flag on fire. That specific song was on like a fucking Aaron Carter CD or some shit growing up.
Oh,
like I'm sure
God.
He did a cover of it. So like, I played it over and over again. So when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, I have not heard this song in so long. And I can only ever relate it to like being a child. Like I don't even know the entire lyrics to the whole song. So I don't even know if there's like an adult theme to it. But in my head, it is forever a children's song, whether it is or not.
Another star from childhood that in hindsight, we should never have let happen.
Aaron Carter.
Yeah, he's off the rails.
Name one. No, not even his mental sanity, which is a tragedy in and of itself. Name one good Aaron Carter song.
Aaron's Party?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He's just narrating what happens.
That song goes hard, EJ. Also, the song about when that time he beat Shaq, I put it in the hoop like slam, slam. Did he set up to me?
He's just describing it.
It's a pump up song.
Biggest Aaron Carter fanboy at the age of 7. And if I may quote Tommy Lee Jones from No Country for Old Men, well, I should tweak his words. And then I grew up. Not
AJ, you have Rebecca Black on your playlist. Shut up.
RB Rebecca Black.
No, that's if you're going to bring that shit up, you cannot shit on Aaron Carter. He's covering I Want Candy.
Yeah, fantastic. Unmatched. Iconic. All right, let's transition out of the Aaron Carter versus Rebecca Black discourse and on to leading us back, essentially, the candy trail to our final verdict here. We missed this in the beginning and kind of just want to see what kind of Halloween stuff are you doing or watching this year? Or what sort of something? And member berries, I wanted to talk about, like, what's your favorite new Halloween tradition? Anya, do you have a new favorite Halloween tradition?
A new favorite? I mean, I feel like...
Or a new favorite movie. Or even the best movie that you've seen, your favorite new watch.
Just say something about Halloween. Yeah. That's all we want.
Yeah, I was about to say, Trevor's going to give me like 20 questions to answer.
Say the word Halloween.
I love Halloween. Halloween's always been a big part of my life. And I feel like I keep a lot of the same traditions every year, like trying to carve pumpkins, watching, like there's certain movies that I'm like, these are Halloween movies that must be rewatched every year. But as someone that watches a lot of horror, like, there's horror movies that I kind of drag throughout the whole year. I guess for new tradition-wise, I mean, I guess it's just like an evolved tradition. Every year I always go to some sort of haunted hayride, haunted attraction. And since I've been in Los Angeles, I've always wanted to do it. I've been obsessed with it for years, but was never in a place to do it. Now I get to go to Halloween Horror Nights at Universal, which is really
so
fun.
Jealous.
It's really fun. It is a lot of money. And unfortunately, what I've learned is that unless you shell out the cash for an express pass, you kind of have to accept that like you won't be able to do everything, which kind of blows a little bit, but like the things you do are really good. Like this year I didn't get to do everything. There was like 3 houses that I missed, but there was 8 total on top of like scare zones and the tram and everything else. It was fantastic. It was great. I will do it again next year. So I guess that's my newest Halloween tradition, but it just feels like an elevation of doing, you know, haunted hay rides back home or whatever I had access to. And a new favorite Halloween movie, I just watched the new Rob Zombie Monsters movie, and I'm usually not a Rob Zombie fan. I don't particularly like a lot of his movies. It's so good. It's so fun. It's so like, it's a family movie, which obviously is very different for Rob Zombie, but it is a perfect like Halloween vibe, Halloween, getting in the Halloween spirit movie. A lot of people were hating on it. I don't know if it's because they're Rob Zombie fans that wanted something dark and gritty, but like,
well, the trailer was bad.
It's a silly movie. Like, it's a silly movie. I think this, every set looks great. The coloring is really fun. Went in expecting, like, nothing out of it and was so happily delighted. So it feels like a movie that, like, I will be revisiting.
Do you think I would like it?
Yes, I think you'll have a lot of fun with it.
Do you think AJ would like it?
I don't know. I don't talk to AJ as much as I talk to you, Trevor, to know. And you, I feel like, very much wear what you like on your sleeve, where AJ, I feel like, can be a wild card sometimes.
Sometimes he can be. Likes
and doesn't like. So I would say...
Trevor was flabbergasted that I like Beetlejuice. How do you not like Beetlejuice?
But you don't like James and the Giant Peach, and you didn't like Nightmare Before Christmas until your third watch.
But James and the Giant Peach is just... I've gone over that a million times. Beetlejuice is a classic, and I do like Nightmare Before Christmas, and I think one of the reasons I didn't like it is because I wasn't paying attention to it.
I will say Alex didn't love, I don't think she hated it, but she didn't love the Monsters movie, and we also differ on opinions a lot of the times, did say that, like, at the very least, it puts you in the Halloween spirit. So I would say, give it a chance. I would recommend it to everyone, just to get a Halloween vibe going.
Anyways, AJ, we'll probably talk more about our Halloween stuff next week, right?
Yeah, but I will just say I am, like, deep in the middle of my Child's Play. I don't know why, what possessed me to do it. Maybe it was Charles Lee Ray. But I'm 5.5 movies into the 7-movie Child's Play rewatch, and I'm watching season 2 of Chucky right now, and so far, so good.
I haven't watched second season yet. I've watched first season of Chucky, but yeah, I love Chucky. Yeah. So I always support a Child's Play rewatch. Except the remake, which is awful.
Yes, I don't count that. That was terrible. That wasn't even any semblance of good.
No.
Sorry, Mark Hamill. It wasn't like good.
I haven't seen it.
All right, let's get out of here then.
All right, so before we shift over to our final verdict, Anya, thank you once again for representing the girls who cried before her and coming on and discussing a movie. A Halloween movie.
So it certainly was.
It was a movie. Jonathan Lipnicki is an actor. Maybe. But thank you so much again, Anya. Where can we find the girls who cried before and you? And if you want to ping your letterbox and Alex's letterbox, feel free to do that as well.
Yeah, it might take me a second to pull this shit up. If you want to check out my podcast, which I would love if anyone listening wanted to, especially because I think it's perfect for the season to give it a try. We are the Girls Who Cried Before. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, all that jazz. You can follow us on Instagram at The Girls Who Cried Before. You can follow me on Instagram at G-Way Forever. I think Alex is at Alex Brandley. And then Letterboxd, which is debatably the social medium that I'm on the most. I am A Garrity 15, or just Anya Garrity. I think I'm the only Anya Garrity on there. So you can see all of my horror opinions. And I guess if there's anything else to plug, I just recently co-wrote and co-directed a horror short film that is currently in post-production. So if you want to keep up to date on that, see when it is released and all that fun stuff, you can follow us on Instagram at Black Veil Short Film.
Heck yeah. It's going to be good.
Yes, it is.
All right. Awesome. And now let's jump into our final verdict. AJ, Anya, I can't think of it. Do you recommend this movie? Do you recommend The Little Vampire? Is it a trick or a treat? Ooh, okay, there we go. Is this a trick or a treat?
Good one. We'll have to use that again.
We'll use it again next week.
I would say that this is a trick. Like, there are some treat tendencies. I do think that had they anchored this movie with a different lead, and I do think that if this movie had a more consistent tone at times, I think there actually was enough here. Like, I did like the flashback stuff. I did like the last 20 minutes. I do think it ended solidly. I did like the vampire performance. So there was a lot here that I actually, you know, unabashedly said, yes, I like this part of the movie. I like these things in the movie. Unfortunately, those good parts never really came together in the right way and were kind of hampered down by the bad parts that it wasn't quite there for me. So unfortunately, going to have to give it a mild pass. But if you're looking for a movie about vampires to revisit from childhood this Halloween from the year 2000 on Disney Plus, you don't have to pay to rent it. I'm going to recommend Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire.
Yeah.
Trevor's favorite movie from that era.
quickly to go off that, I would recommend the original Mom's Gonna Date with a Vampire, Fright Night.
Yes,
it's not good. No, I disagree.
Yes, you are it's not so tapped to sit here and say that Fright Night is not good. It inherently is good. Flickering. There's so much amazing shit in that movie. Practical effects alone.
Yeah.
I'd rather Alvin and the Chipmunks Meet the Wolfman.
God have mercy.
No, so with you, Anya.
Thank you. Well, in terms of if the little vampires trick or a treat, I would say that it is a trick in the sense that it was something that I was really excited to revisit. And I'm happy that I did. And I'm happy I came on here and had a really fun time. But it feels like a trick because it is a movie that, like, I think if you watch as a child, there's a lot of, like, fond memories of. And you're like, oh, my God, yeah, that movie was, like, so cool and blah, blah, blah. And then you revisit it and you feel like you were tricked because you're like, this is bad. Wait. Mm-hmm. And now I'm, like, upset that I kind of revisited it because now it's, like, a little ruined forever. Not permanently mm-hmm. for me. Mm-hmm. I always hold on to those memberberry moments that will, you know, those visuals that will always, like, mean something to me because they formed my little child brain. But, yeah, it feels overall like a trick. There are many other vampire movies and many other children's spooky Halloween movies that I would recommend before I recommended The Little Vampire.
I'm kind of with you, unfortunately. This movie tricked me.
Yeah.
It's not awful. It is better than Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire. It is not better than Fright Night.
You think this is better than Fright Night? EJ.
Totally with Anya here.
They're about the same.
Oh my God. Wow. I'm going to get fucking indigestion from this.
I think if you have fond memories of this movie as a kid, I think you could give it a watch because it's, you know, wholesome enough, it's sweet enough and it's worth exploring because there's some interesting ideas. Also, Richard E. Grant is fun. That Jim, whatever his name is fun as the vampire hunter.
Jim British.
His name. Jim Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
Jim Downton. Yeah.
There are some fun moments, but it doesn't carry the movie well. The acting's just not, it's all over the place. So unfortunately I will not be recommending it. But I'll recommend another vampire movie that I just saw this year for the first time. Only Lovers Left Alive. If you want to really like fucking go nuts and not be able to sleep that night. Just a very, very deep movie, which deals with a lot of things and a lot of isolation and kind of just very existential. It's like one of the most existential movies with vampires I've seen. And
hey, Trevor, can you log these in your letterbox, please?
That he's locked out.
You know, after you bullied me for a year and a half to get letterbox, and I did.
Okay,
and
then because AJ was logging all of his movies on Excel, and it was driving me nuts. So, yeah, I'll recommend that instead. But it's definitely not for kids. It's if you're our age and want to, like, think about things. Yeah, that's basically it. Anya, thanks again for coming on for not just a special spooky episode, but our 100th episode. We're so glad we got to celebrate it with you. To everyone, thank you so much for listening to us for 100 episodes, 50 episodes if you only did 50, 25, however many episodes you have listened to. We appreciate you listening. And to our patrons, again, we do have a Patreon that you can join and join our patrons as of now on the upper level of Ben Franke, Ray Munoz, and Sawyer Christian Sawyer. thank you so much to our patrons. You can become a patron at that $4 level and get thanked in every episode and the show notes, or just $1 level and get some other insights and behind the scenes information and just get access to the Patreon feed. And just keep liking us. We're on Instagram at the Old Kids Movies, Twitter at Old Kids Movies. Listen to more episodes and tell us what you want to hear. Anything else, AJ?
Well, I know what we're doing next week, but candidly, I don't have a teaser.
You don't have a teaser.
Let's put it this way. We're doing another Halloween movie that is based on a Disney ride, and it's celebrating its 25th anniversary.
I know.
And it is a DCOM.
No, it is officially not a DCOM.
Okay, but we will... Yeah, I mean, if you know, you know. If you don't know, you can type in this teaser and you'll find it. Yes. All right, that'll do it.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will see you next week for our 101st episode, the Halloween special of The Old Kids Movies.